Rules Committee, Senate Rules Committee.
I object.
On the agenda today, this is April 22nd, and we have a work session for the purpose of considering a major drafting request. I'll open a work session for considering major drafting requests.
Madam Co-Chair, we have LC 3570, urges Congress to amend the Internal Revenue Code. This has to do with veterans and home loan eligibility. This would be for introduction by the Senate Rules Committee. You have already seen this concept and approved it for drafting on April 10th.
Is this another memorial?
No, this is a...
I have this available. Yes.
It's a memorial. Memorial.
This is for Jim. Did you want to explain that again, or Senator Burdick? You'll have questions.
I have for her, Senator Burdick, to look at if she would like to. She is correct. It is a memorial. It urges Congress to change the law to make veterans eligible for home loans. Veterans who served in the armed forces after 1976, I believe it is, not eligible to participate in the home loan programs the way other veterans are. That leaves a lot of the conflicts that the country has been involved with out of the eligibility. This would restore that eligibility or make them eligible.
Okay. So, we're in a work session. I need a motion for LC 3570. Senator Burdick moves we accept LC 3570 as a major drafting major introduction. Any objection? Any discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved. What do we have next?
We have a work session on two measures. Right here. Just a work session on.
Oh.
Senate Bill 552.
Here we have a measure drafting and a work session.
Yeah, we have work sessions on two measures, Senate Bill 552 and SJR 19. Senator Metzger's here on those.
So I think we'll go there instead of here. Close the work session on the LC drafting, or LC measure introduction, and also open a work session on SJR 19.
Madam Co-Chair, SJR 19, the proposed amendment to the Oregon Constitution to allow candidates for public office to be elected at a runoff election where vacancy and nomination occurs prior to regularly scheduled election. And Senate Bill 552 provides the actual statute that provides the procedures for that runoff election. The amendments you have, -1 for the SJR 19 and -1 for 552, changes that nomenclature from runoff to special election, and also makes one other change, which is to limit the situations to where the vacancy is due to death or physical or mental incapacity of the candidate.
Good afternoon. Well, what a distinguished panel.
Well, yes, and we had another member join us. I'm surprised, Madam Chair.
I'm here for the mental incapacity part, Madam Chair.
So Exhibit A is to my right, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, welcome. Thank you for having us with the work session here. And with me is John Limbach from the Secretary of State's office. But when we had this before us for public hearing, a number of issues were raised. Working with the Secretary of State's office, you have a -1 on Senate Bill 552.
And I need to have you identify yourself.
I'm sorry. Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26. You know, we always tell people to do this stuff, and we never remember ourselves. You know?
Of us remembers.
And working with the Secretary of State's office and in adjusting timelines that both they and the county clerks felt were best workable in the situation, and those are embodied in the -1 amendments on Senate Bill 552. On constitutional referral, SJR 19, there's a -1 amendment that refers to an issue that Senator Beyer brought up during public hearing, and that was did not conform correctly to 552, which mentioned the mental incapacity of the candidate as well as the death of the candidate. And so that was included in the -1 amendment for SJR 19. And again, as we recall from our discussion on this last month, this is to conform our election laws with our new vote by mail process, which allows then major parties to replace candidates during who die or become mentally incapacitated during the vote by mail election. Our current statutes allow for party replacement but do not take into account the vote-by-mail process in which we have an 18- to 21-day election rather than an election day. And this would take care of that problem and hopefully not a situation we would have to deal with very often. And Mr. Limbach has any questions for him or the incapacitated person to my right?
This incapacitated person to your right have anything to say? Did you notice our distinguished panel?
Well, I think mental incapacity is a very broad outline of
Madam Chair, who is this person?
Senator Tony Corcoran from Cottage Grove, home of the mentally incapacitated. You know what? I'm just fed up with this bill. I'm not going to say anything.
In fact, I'm leaving.
All right, thank you. Improvement.
I'm going to. I did open a work session on SJR 19, but I also need to open a work session on Senate Bill 553. John, did you have anything you wanted to contribute to this?
Only that all of our concerns are taken care of. We're quite happy with the bill and support it as well.
Okay. Any further discussion of the committee members?
Who is that person, Madam Chair?
I'm John Lindbeck, director. I'm John Lindbeck, director of the Elections Division in the Secretary of State's office.
My committee members are just on their toes. If we don't put the names on the record, they're just really gung ho here.
Madam Chair,
Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. I'm looking at your amendments, and I don't.
Which one?
We'll start with SBR 19. Mm-hmm. We get down to the any vacancy. We've added the vacancy has to be due to the physical and mental incapacity of the candidate.
Yes.
But at this point, I mean, is there a timeline now? When, I mean, because I thought you were speaking in the context of after the ballots have gone out to people. And I don't see that anywhere. I'm wondering
yes.
if that's
in. Yes, Senator, that is addressed in the enacting legislation in 552. Again, I think, and as I think Mr. Ruttlinger pointed out in the letter that that had distributed to you when you had questions about the prescription part of this Constitution, this allows the Elections Office to set the rules, the time frames, and when this would take place, and then that is embodied in Senate Bill 552, which is the enacting legislation. And the SJR 19 doesn't set the time frame. That just says that they are due to this situation that the elections officials, may call for a runoff election. And 552 has the specificity in it.
Okay.
Senator Metzger, you may have already answered this, but and I apologize if you have. But where's mental capacity, incapacity of the?
Well, you're talking about a definition.
Mm-hmm.
Which you might, if I may, Madam Chair, might ask Ted Ruttlinger, Legislative Counsel, to come forward, because he can address that issue.
Yes, I'm looking at 552, Ted.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Ted Reitlinger, Legislative Counsel's Office. The bill does not contain a specific definition of physical or mental incapacity. The way the bill is drafted now, that determination would be up to the Secretary of State's office to determine. There is precedent in the Oregon Constitution and the statutes. For example, for the governor's office, it allows the governor to be removed in the case of a disability. That's in the Constitution. The statutes then set forth a specific procedure for the governor where the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and others get involved in making that determination. So there's precedent in both the statutes and the Constitution. If the way this bill is drafted now, the Secretary of State would be charged with determining whether a particular vacancy occurred because of a death, because of a physical disability, or because of a mental disability. If folks disagreed with the Secretary of State's determination under this bill, they would have the normal legal recourse that they have for any other decision the Secretary of State makes under the election laws, which would be to appeal to circuit court.
Okay.
Okay.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. So if you've got a case where 20 days before election, a car wreck takes, you got a candidate in a coma, or maybe not quite that severe. Okay, let's use a coma for example. The Secretary of State says this candidate is mentally incapable of holding office. What happens if 6 days later the person comes out of the coma and they're perfectly fine, yet the Secretary of State has already declared a vacancy in that seat? You're still 14 days prior to the election. What is the recourse? Explain to me the recourse.
Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, the thing to remember is that for this bill to work, there first has to be a vacancy in the nomination. So under your scenario, if somebody was injured in a car accident and was in a coma, they couldn't necessarily declare withdraw from the nomination. In other words, if there's going to be a vacancy, somebody has to either die or withdraw. They have to take affirmative action. Nothing in this bill would grant the Secretary of State the authority to declare that a particular office is vacant. The person who is the nominee would have to either die or withdraw as a candidate. Then you would have a vacancy. It would be at that point that the Secretary of State would say, okay, this person withdrew from the office because of some physical or mental disability, or it's obviously vacant because they died. So it really wouldn't give the Secretary of State any additional authority to make any determinations about whether or not a vacancy occurred.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer, go ahead.
Could you explain to me then, in the case, and I'm going to use a real-life example we have, it was in New Jersey, where the candidate for U.S. Senate withdrew because he didn't say he was mentally incapable. He said, I can't win. I'm going to withdraw. Would that be, could that person have said, I'm mentally incapable to hold this office, I'm going to withdraw from the nomination?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, that's really sort of a factual question. It seems to me that from reading newspaper accounts of that story that that particular incident would not fit within the parameters of this bill, because it seems pretty clear that there was not a physical or mental disability involved. And again, under this bill, the Secretary of State would be charged with making that initial determination. And if they decided one way or the other, then folks would have the ability to challenge that determination under the usual statutory and administrative procedures that are now available. But in theory, disputes about the whether or not a vacancy is due to a disability could arise, and they would be handled in the normal legal processes.
One more, Madam Chair, then I promise
we'll be quiet for a little while. Yes, Senator. No, go ahead.
So if someone withdraws because they claim they're mentally incapable, won't they then be challenged by the other side, say they're mentally incapable to make that decision? So they can't withdraw.
That's a crazy notion.
Madam Chair. The other side wouldn't challenge that because they would have won the election. This only allows them to declare a special election when a vacancy has occurred.
Madam Chair, my point is that in the case of, was it New Jersey? Is that what?
Torricelli. Yeah.
Torricelli, exactly. I mean, in that example, when they get a candidate, they know they can't win. And the same if you have a candidate who's mentally incapable, he or she is probably not going to win. So the other side.
We got a building full of people.
The other side is naturally going to want to keep them in the position so that another person, so that number one, the election will have to stand, and number two, they can't put somebody else in who possibly could win. So I don't see how. When the person has to declare themselves mentally incapable, to me that becomes the other side's going to say, well, if they're mentally incapable, they can't make that determination. They're because they're not mentally capable.
Ted, do you want to respond at all? You're looking questions.
No.
Okay.
Senator Beyer, look what you've done.
Senator Burdick?
Yeah, the New Jersey situation, I think it's fair to say this, if vacancy suddenly occurs like this, the party that has the vacancy occurs is at a severe disadvantage as an election goes for. I mean, if a new person has come in, introduce themselves to the voters, blah, blah, blah. In the New Jersey situation, I'm almost 100% certain that that occurred well before the 30-day window of this bill. I think that occurred sometime around July or August before the election, where you had time for another candidate to get in, launch a campaign, and so on. This is a kind of a catastrophic measure designed to at least give both parties a chance if one of their nominees dies. But I think I don't think anyone would argue that that party would be at any kind of an advantage if this had to go into effect. I think the party for whom this went into effect would, by the nature of it and the timing of it, be at a severe disadvantage.
Madam Co-Chair, if I could, and I think that points it out well. I think there's a, again, as both John and Ted have pointed out, the Secretary of State would make a final determination, so this would not be something that someone could just determine on their own without challenge if it was some tomfoolery going on. But keep in mind that under the current law, all this does is really conform our new vote-by-mail procedures to the current law. The current law says a party can replace now. It's just that whatever party has that vacancy during the vote-by-mail procedure would, for all intents and purposes, not be able to avail themselves of the current law because so many people would have voted and there's no procedure to recall those ballots. So if you take away all these issues and just have current law and we go back to and we don't have a vote-by-mail procedure, if a vacancy occurs, then the party can replace. That's how it is now. This doesn't change that other than the fact that accommodates the fact that party, whether they be the Republican or Democratic Party, if that situation occurs during a vote-by-mail election, they have, for all intents and purposes, been taken away their right to name a replacement because of the fact that the vote would have already been underway. I gave the example, for example, of Kevin Mannix. If Mr. Mannix had passed away 10 days before the election, the party would have had an opportunity under current law to replace him, except for the fact that at that point 400,000 people had already voted and not one would have voted for that replacement, and therefore the party would never have had a chance to win the election. And as I pointed out, under current law, the way things are, had Mr. Mannix then won the election, John Kitzhaber would be governor. And it's just the way the system is.
No, Ted Kulongowski would have been governor.
No, had Mannix won the election. Had Mr. Mannix lost and won the election, okay. Because the incumbent governor did not stand for re-election and was defeated, then John Kitzhaber would be governor. So this avoids that rather embarrassing situation and allows the party an opportunity to actually win the election. I was rewriting history, Senator Brown, to say it was what if.
Madam Chair. Senator Metzger, I was just saying that the Senator Courtney race was actually a more apropos example,
yes.
As Senator Courtney was on his near-deathbed,
yes.
2 weeks out from the election, and had he passed away and still won the election, this is a perfect example when the
yes.
bill would apply.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Who would have won that case?
Probably Randy Frankie.
No, I mean, what would have happened in that? Because in the governor situation, the current governor stays governor. But
it's different, yes, Senator.
In that case where Peter was the incumbent senator and, had he got more votes than Randy Frankie, but he was no longer with us.
Well, that's so depressing.
Keep going. I like this.
John says we have this another serenary.
I think I can answer this.
Yeah, the legislature is different.
Would have submitted three names, the precinct people would have submitted three names,
yeah.
The county commission would have.
Both these gentlemen know the answers.
I might mention to the committee that you're making it very difficult on our committee assistant to track the discussion here.
No, that's actually not correct. There is no point. If Senator Courtney had gone into the hospital and actually passed away before the election occurred, and Senator Courtney had still won the election, that's the case this bill would have applied for. There would not have been an appointment. There would have been a special election.
But without the bill, the other sponsor.
Excuse me.
Yes.
A special what?
Special election.
We are all fortunate our Senate president did not make a test case of the bill, but we're trying to avoid that in the future.
Before we were even here.
What did you think I said? Oh, you think it's...
Yeah. I have one more. I just need some clarification on this, and maybe, Ted, you can address this. Just take me through how the Secretary of State determines that a vacancy has occurred. If he's dead, if someone's dead, I understand that. But it goes on to say, or physical or mental incapacity of the candidate. I think you said the candidate would have to either die or withdraw. And I guess I don't want to belabor what Senator Beyer started, but is the Secretary of State going to determine whether the candidate is physically or mentally incapacitated?
Madam Chair, to some extent. First of all, that the election laws currently provide all of the procedures for somebody to withdraw who's been nominated, say, at the primary election. They can withdraw in July or August or whenever and be replaced by the party. Secretary of State would have nothing to do with the decision of somebody to actually withdraw from the nomination. But if a candidate withdrew because they were obviously too ill or had some other issues physically or mentally to proceed, the Secretary of State's office would look at those facts under this bill and say, okay, it's clear to us that this person withdrew because of a physical disability that would prevent them from serving. In that case, we're going to go ahead and implement the provisions of this bill and hold a special election. But if somebody were to withdraw because of purely political reasons that were unrelated to any disability, then the Secretary of State, I think, would also have to look at those facts and say, okay, we find that this person withdrew and the withdrawal is not due to a disability. Therefore, there is no special election and the normal processes that apply now would apply.
I just was wondering why we say, I like everything that says the handwritten goes that the vacancy is due to the death. But when you go or physical or mental incapacity of the candidate, let's say that a person has for some reason or become mentally, have a stroke. They're mentally incapacitated. Or physically incapacitated. I guess I want to go back to the medical because I'm mental. Because if I'm mentally incapacitated, am I going to be able to sign a form? I'm trying to get this step process going through. I need to sign a form to withdraw. Do I not?
Madam Chair, yes, you do.
And what if I'm not? I guess the wording to me, would it be better if it was said death or disability? Because you said, like, to remove a governor, there's statutes that address being disabled. But when you, disabled to me is different than mental incapacity. If I am mentally incapacitated, I might not be able to do a form. So does someone else do it for me? I'm to help me get a clarification of this.
Madam Chair, I admit to not knowing what the rules are if somebody is in a coma, for example, and obviously can't fulfill the duties of the office, and that goes on for a lengthy period of time. I don't know if somebody through power of attorney or some other fashion can withdraw on behalf of the person. I just can't answer that question, and I don't know if it's come up in recent history.
Well, I was hoping you could clarify it. It's just troubling to me trying to figure out how this would come about with the language that's in here if, in fact, someone was mentally incapacitated or...
Well, Madam Chair, what I can clarify is that the way it's written now to apply, somebody would have to actually withdraw. They would have to go through the steps necessary to do that.
And say that they were mentally incapacitated or physically incapacitated. Okay, further questions and discussion?
Madam Chair, I just side conversation. It is certainly possible, I presume, if somebody became mentally incapacitated and for whatever reason did not, his or her family thought they should not remain on the ballot, I assume someone would have the power of attorney to remove.
He mentioned that.
Okay, all right. You were talking.
Next time I'll listen. Never mind.
Okay, further questions on our discussion on this bill? Any more discussions? Any motions?
Well, I can tell you, Madam Chair, that I went to a psychiatrist once. He told me I was crazy. I asked for a second opinion, and he says you're ugly, too.
Madam Chair, I'll move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 552.
Senator Brown has moved the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 552. Any further discussion? Any objection?
Well, I guess, does 552, don't you need 19 before 552 doesn't mean anything?
Yeah, we need them both.
We do need them both. I have a work session on both. Senator Brown happened to move 552 first. Senator Brown, would you like to remove your motion or amendment?
Way to go, Senator Brown.
No, I guess.
No, you're right.
It's fine. I mean,
it may be
19
putting the
moving also would be like.
Yes, I just haven't gotten there yet.
Good question, Senator Byer.
Yes.
Because we have to amend it as well. Okay.
Pinky
Pete. I don't know if he's confident to serve on this committee or not. I'm really questioning
that. It's quite an enjoyable committee, Madam Co-Chair. I'm sorry I don't get to serve on this one.
Oh, it's a wonderful committee. Senator Brown, you want to...
I move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 552.
Senator Brown has moved the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 552. You just did that a minute ago. We're doing it again right now.
But there was no vote.
No vote. Any opposed? With discussion, we were having discussion. Discussion on moving the -1 amendments.
It's a great idea. Madam Chair.
You got some amendments I don't understand.
So the discussion, Senator Byer. any opposition?
I'll just wait for this bill.
-1 amendments are adopted with no objections. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move Senate Bill 552 as unanimously amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Brown has moved Senate Bill 552 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Byer.
I think, personally, that the issue of physical or mental incapacity of the candidate is too blurry, so to speak. And in the bill version, it's probably not as offensive because that can be changed again by the legislature. But I think that up to the death part is very clear. We all know what the death is, I think. It's most people know enough to find. But this discussion has raised too many issues on how this will work in physical and mental incapacity. So I think until that gets cleared up, I can't support this going forward. And I like the concept up to the death part, but that's just where I'm going to be on this from now on.
Any further? You'll be a no. Any further no's on this bill? We'll record Senator Byer as a no, and no further objections. Senate Bill 552 is moved to the floor as amended. SJR 19.
Madam Chair, I would move the -1 amendments to SJR 19.
Senator Brown moves the -1 amendments to SJR 19. Discussion, please.
Same objection.
Same objection from Senator Byer.
On the amendment?
Yeah, I don't like them.
Okay.
In the bill, it's one thing. You can change that. Okay. You can't change the Constitution.
Okay. We do it all the time.
Huh?
You change the Constitution all the time.
Well,
what are you talking
do.
About?
We can ask the people to do
yes.
it.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. We, the people, do it all the time.
Well, I will vote for the -1 amendments, but I would just share that I have the same concern. I wish it was deaf and or disabled and not the physical and the mental incapacity of the wording. Any other objections to -1 amendments? Not so moved.
Do you have to declare a conflict of interest with that objection?
I'm not objecting. I'm just concerned. Okay, Senator Brown.
Oh, thank you, Senator Plano. I think you raised some legitimate concerns. That being said, I do. I would move SJR 19 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Brown moves SJR 19 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Same objection.
Senator Beyer will be recorded as a no.
I'll object, one for one.
Senator Atkinson will be recorded as a no. Any further objections? If not, so moved. Close the work session on SJR 19 and Senate Bill 552. Open a... Yes, Senator Metzger, will you carry these bills?
We're happy to do so, and we'll try to get some of those other more specific answers.
Thank you.
For the floor. Thank you.
Open a informational meeting on Help America Vote, and I'll call on John Lindbeck. Jim, do you want to give a...
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. We put this on in a hurry, and I apologize to those who didn't get notice in time of this. This is an information meeting on the Help America Vote Act. The bill that implements this in Oregon is HB 2145, which was in Ways and Means. They acted on it in a B version on Friday, so it's on its way between Ways and Means and the House floor. The statement has been made that there's a... April 29th deadline on this for getting part of the bill in place, so that means all of the bill. So I think you'll be seeing it on the Senate floor soon. We weren't sure whether it was going to be coming to the Senate Rules Committee, as we had heard earlier in the session that it would be. So we determined to have this information meeting for the members of the committee so they could understand the act. And I think that the presenters here will mention HB 2145 as well.
Thank you. And, Jim, I just wanted to add, I apologize for the short notice for community folks and the public to participate in this informational hearing. We just got the information yesterday that the bill needed to be signed by April 29th. We had had several meetings with both the Secretary of State's office and the House Rules Committee to let them know we thought it was important for your Senate Rules Committee to hear this bill. Unfortunately, the bill was delayed in both Ways and Means in the House Rules Committee, so that's just not going to happen. This is the best we could do on short time notice, and I actually authorized this without Senator Clarno's knowledge yesterday morning, and so here we are. Thank you very much. Please identify yourself.
I wanted to mention one more time, I'm distributing the A engrossed version of the bill. This is not the current version of the bill.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Thank you. After our discussion yesterday about this issue and the timeline, I don't know that the timeline is quite as concrete as we have been led to believe, and I think Mr. Ruttlinger was just here. At some place, if I can find it.
Senator Beyer, my understanding is that the count needs to be set up by April 29th deadline, pursuant to federal law. If you have some other information, you know better than everybody else in this building.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
And Ted Rutland is not here, but in a response to a question asked of him as of this morning, which the question was, you asked whether the Help America Vote Act requires House Bill 2145 to be enacted into law by April 28, 2003, which is not later than 6 months after the effective date of the HAVA. The enactment date is important because it affects the state's eligibility to receive federal funds under Title I of HAVA. Short answer. The answer is a qualified no. And it is then a long answer. I would be happy to share that with anyone, or we could have Ted come up here. Would probably be the best way to do it, too. I'm just putting this out.
Senator Beyer, your leadership is not willing to take the risk. So that's...
I'm not opposed to it going straight to the floor.
Okay, good.
But I'm just saying that I don't believe the answer is black and white, as we were led to believe yesterday.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Beyer. I appreciate that. I don't think your leadership, including your Ways and Means folks, are willing to take the risk that there would be another answer. Okay. But I appreciate that information. We'd love it if you shared it with all of us. Please proceed. Whoever's first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm John Lindbeck. I'm Director of the Elections Division in the Secretary of State's office. And with me today are Lynn Rosick, who from the Department of Justice, who advises us on a daily basis on elections issues and has gone through and analyzed the Help America Vote Act and compared it to state statute and has helped us in numerous ways trying to figure out what's what in regards to this bill. On my left is Charles Stern, the clerk of Yamhill County, who has participated in various parts of helping Oregon get ready to comply with the Help America Vote Act. Our office has embarked on the development of a state plan, a state election plan, which is required under the Help America Vote Act, and Mr. Stern has been instrumental in the development of that draft plan. In front of you today, you should have a document that's entitled Federal Election Reform, Help America Vote Act, Information Hearing for Senate Rules Committee, April 22nd. These are simply my notes so that you have a copy with my notes of the presentation I'm about to give you. There's also a copy of the draft Oregon Elections Plan that looks like this, and I'm going to make references to it in my presentation. And there is also a copy of the Help America Vote Act public hearing schedule in which we are about to wrap up the 7 public hearings that we're having throughout the state. Those will be wrapped up by the end of the week, and I thought you'd like to see where those hearings have been held. Let's start at the top with my notes. The Help America Vote Act was adopted by Congress last October and signed into law into December by President Bush. The bill is a combination of reactions to what happened in Florida in the 2000 general election and Congress's attempts to address some of the problems that surfaced in Florida. It is considered civil rights legislation by members of minority communities throughout the country. It is considered an important piece of disabilities rights legislation. It includes some fraud prevention measures with some new voter identification requirements for citizens who register to vote through the mail. It reflects a desire by Congress in general to improve resources for elections in America, since the federal government has never given any kind of considerable resources to states and local governments to help with elections. And it involves some transfer of authority from local elections officials to state elections officials in regards to elections. Let's go first to the reactions to Florida. One of the things that the Help America Vote Act does is it requires each voting system to assist voters who make errors on their ballots. For Oregon, that doesn't really apply here because we're an all-vote-by-mail state. What it means for other states is that they are going to be required to use equipment in the polling place that when a voter votes their ballot and feeds it through that equipment in the polling place, that the equipment in the polling place will warn them whether or not they've marked their ballot correctly. What that means for Oregon is that the provisions of the bill require us to do a voter education project about how to avoid errors when marking your ballot and what to do if you make an error on your ballot.
Madam Chair.
Senator Brown.
Just a couple questions there. Was the act passed in recognition of Oregon's vote-by-mail system? I mean, was it inclusive of the fact that we do vote differently
yes.
here?
Yes, okay. In fact, there were some amendments done at various processes in the bill that do recognize vote-by-mail.
Okay.
And that was very important to us, and both Senators Wyden and Smith were helpful in making that happen.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Brown.
This is sort of another follow-up, and you may pick up on this, but, I mean, in Multnomah County, we've blackened circles, and obviously if I do it with a pencil, I make a mistake, I can erase it. I know that some of the counties are still using punch cards, and I assume that that's where the difficulty occurs in terms of errors. Are there provisions in the bill addressing making sure we get those punch card balloting systems updated?
Yes. As you see on my notes there under reaction to Florida, there are 3 points. And point 3 talks about punch card replacement.
Okay.
The Help America Vote Act is providing money up to $4,000 per precinct in each state. For those precincts that were using punch cards in the 2000 election to replace those punch card systems. It also replaces lever machines that are used in several other states. So far, the appropriations made under this bill are sufficient, the clerks believe, to pay for the tally equipment for the 3 counties that are still using punch cards. That's Lane, Clackamas, and Washington. and to reimburse four counties who are using punch cards in 2000 that have already paid to replace those systems with optical scans. And those four counties are Umatilla, Union, Polk, and Lynn. Okay? The other thing is important item for Oregon that is covered under the reaction to Florida is number two under my notes, where the Help America vote requires each state to implement a centralized mm-hmm. voter registration system. And section 303 of the bill states that it must be a, quote, single, uniform, official, centralized, interactive, computerized statewide voter registration list defined, maintained, and administered at the state level that contains the name and registration information of every legally registered voter in the state and assigns a unique identifier in each legally to each legally registered voter in the state. It further states that local election officials must be able to obtain immediate electronic access to the system. And so as part of the Oregon Elections Plan, draft plan that you have in front of you, there's a section on that. And the legislature, as you may recall, in the last session, passed a bill requiring a centralized voter registration system, and the e-board appropriated to the Secretary of State's office $250,000 for us to get started on that project. We will be able to use that $250,000 that was appropriated by the e-board as matching funds for some of the federal funding under this bill. So let's go to the civil rights legislation part of it. This bill requires an administrative complaint procedure for anyone with complaints related to any of the Title III requirements of the bill. And also the centralized voter registration system is considered a civil rights component of that bill. A concern in other states, which is really not a concern here, is the rights of felons and whether or not they're, you know, what are their registration rights after their civil rights are restored in some of these other states. That has not been an issue here, and so, but that's why it is considered civil rights legislation by some of the minority groups across the country. Disabilities. This was really quite remarkable in watching this piece of legislation develop from sort of beginning to end in Congress. As it developed, the disability sections became more and more important, and after it came out, it almost left you with the impression that this is first and foremost a disabilities rights bill on voting, with a lot of other stuff tacked on. What the bill means for us is, and this is reflected again in the draft plan, that it requires states to include voting machines or technology for folks with disabilities to use that will enable them for the first time to cast a vote in private. Currently, for folks who are totally disabled, folks like Charles Stern here and other county clerks will get a call from...
Is that a black totally
disabled? No. Let me finish my sentence. Voters with disabilities who need assistance in marking their ballot will call them, and the county clerks will send out election workers, you know, with the political balance to assist them in marking their ballot, which is fine, except what we have heard from folks with disabilities for years is that they would really like to be able to cast their vote in private just like everybody else. There is technology being developed by the vendors who produce voting machines that indeed allow voters with disabilities to do that. And this technology is mobile. And what the draft Oregon election plan calls for is a minimum of two of these machines in each county, one that would be available for use at the county elections office, and one that could be taken around to the homes of voters with disabilities where those workers could allow them to use the technology to vote privately. Some of the counties will want more than two, and the plan certainly allows for that. We should take a look at it.
Senator Brown. Actually, not under disabilities, but under civil rights. My understanding of one of the reasons why people have a difficulty voting for those who are citizens that speak English as a second language is the ballot is not printed in their first language, which primarily would be Spanish, at least in Oregon. I know that the Secretary of State had a task force. Is there anything that the bill does that addresses the need to have ballots in different languages, i.e. like they do in California?
Oregon does not fall, because of the population thresholds under federal law, does not fall under the threshold that would require us to provide ballots in other languages. However, this same DRE technology can be used to provide ballots in other languages in a more convenient fashion. We could certainly do that, even though we're not required to. And we did have, plans in Oregon, and have looked at those issues. What's the best way to put this? Let's say that we have looked at those issues under other languages, in, under the context of the development of our Oregon elections plan.
Thanks.
Money. The federal assistance could be extensive under this. We're expecting the funding to come through over the course of 3 years. And we could be eligible up to $42 million over 3 years in Oregon. Some of the money requires no match, and some of the money requires a 5% match. The Secretary of State must certify by April 29th that we're going to comply with the federal bill by having an elections fund and setting up an administrative complaint procedure, and this will help us qualify for up to $7.3 million in what these folks in D.C. call early money, and that early money does not require a match. And this gets us to Senator Beyer's issue about whether or not we absolutely have to have the fund by the April 29th in order for the Secretary of State to certify that we are going to be compliant with the bill. The April 29th date is important because the money becomes available on April 29th. And the Secretary of State must certify must present this certification to the federal government by April 29th. We need House Bill 2145 because that creates a special election fund. And the reason why we need a statute to create that special election fund is that the federal bill requires that any interest earned on its money that's placed on that fund has to go back into the fund itself. And that's different from a lot of other federal monies that are awarded to the states and makes this unique. And so the Secretary of State will provide this certification. We're eligible for an immediate $5 million, and we could put it in the fund, and we could immediately start drawing the interest on that rather than allowing the federal, leaving it in the federal account to draw interest for the feds, or placing it in some other account here where the interest would not go back to us, but would go back to the feds. So that's the importance of the April 29th date, Senator Beyer, is the ability to immediately put that money into an elections account and for the state of Oregon to get the interest on it and for it not to go somewhere else. So what the state needs to do is adopt House Bill 2145 as soon as possible. Again, it creates that election fund so that we can receive the money and collect the interest on it. It provides authority for the Secretary of State's office to adopt an administrative complaint procedure by rule. If you have any questions about what that administrative complaint procedure would look like, there's a section in the draft plan that's quite detailed on that. And it also actually, number three here isn't applicable to that. Let's talk about our state plan. This goes into first primarily to how Oregon will meet the requirements of the bill. This plan does not talk in any great detail about going beyond requirements of the bill. To the extent that future appropriations allow us to do that, we're required to update the plan every year, and we would follow the same process. We'd involve the public in any updates of the plan and the legislature in with any sort of adjustments to using federal funds for items that are not strictly required by the federal act. So We will complete our public hearings this week. Citizens have until April 29th to provide written comments on the plan, and they can do so on the Secretary of State's website. And that completes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer questions. Have Lynn and Charles here who can help on any matters related to this.
Thank you, John. Lynn, did you have anything to contribute?
No, I'm just here if any questions come up that I can assist.
Nice to have you here. How about you, Charles?
One or two, if I may, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Charles Stern. I'm the Yamhill County Clerk, and I'm here to represent the Oregon Association of County Clerks. This is a kind of the continuation of federal involvement of what has always been the state's responsibility. And I know there's some of us that may not be very fond of that idea, but it's here. It began in 65 with the Voting Rights Act, and 93 with the National Voter Registration Act, NAVRA, and continues with HAVA as they continue to encroach upon what has always been the state's responsibility. This is the first bill to bring money with it. And in a substantial amount of money. It means a lot to those counties that since the 2000 general have replaced their punch card voting systems with optical scan systems. And so that also speaks somewhat to the timing of it, is if the funds could be in place so that those kind of reimbursements can be made. Those small counties that have stepped up and done what might be viewed as the right thing now could receive some funds back to help them with their budgeting. What we see is the first appropriations. I'd like to point out page 41 and 42 of the plan has the proposed budget of how it would be used, and it's kind of the first out monies would be used for. Gives you some hard dollars to look at, and we can only hope that the federal government will continue to appropriate basis of what was authorized over the three-year period. In response to Senator Brown's question on error correction, Congress also, when they were talking about errors, they also looked at over and under votes. And one of the things that we have to better describe is the impact of voting for more than one person when it says vote for one, and a voter marks several. And we all know they do that at times, sometimes as a statement of how they feel about the candidates, perhaps. So that's all a part of what they viewed as errors, which may or may not be an actual error. Be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you. We appreciate you coming here. Anybody have any questions? Senator Byer.
Thank you. John, Section 5, allowing the Secretary of State for a series of long-term methods of ballots. Can't they do that now? If they send a little bit to you, what happens?
We don't really have that happen now, and this is just simply placed in to sort of contemplate a potential situation. If it happened now, we just pass it on to the county, but it's nice to have explicit authority to do that, and what this section does is provide us that explicit authority.
Charles, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I would like to. One of the things, if we're getting down to the deadline, you know, Secretary of State forwards them on to us, but where they receive timely, this makes it clear that by getting a ballot to the Secretary of State's office by 8 o'clock, it is timely, the same as getting it to any other county clerk's office by 8 o'clock. I think that's a critical piece of it, is that the timeliness, that it is a valid ballot cast.
Does that answer your question, Senator
Byer?
Any other questions? We have one more person who would like to testify. Thank you very much. Kathy, would you like to come up? Probably going to lose some committee members here real shortly, so we'd love to have you visit with us. And
the indomitable Cappy Heaton
right.
From Lane County.
From Lane County, yes.
Legislative chair of the League of Women Voters.
Right.
A very tough lady.
Well, that's the way they come in your district, right?
That's correct, ma'am.
Hi, Cappy. Would you introduce yourself for the record?
Thank you. co-chair Plano. I'm not sure I'm going to thank Senator Corcoran, but that's better than what he introduced me last week as the infamous Kathy. Indomitable probably is a little better. Yeah. I don't have a lot of remarks to make except that as I'm Kathy Eaton, the government coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And as our name implies, voters' equity is extremely important to us. And I've been privileged to serve on the steering committee for HAVA through the process of developing the plan. We feel that this draft is a good representation of what we were asked by the federal government to do in our state. Just this last week, I received a copy of the, what's considered the model legislation for HAVA that was put together by a national committee of groups that were interested in this. Those of us who have looked at that feel that our HAVA draft plan is much better than the model legislation is. I attended one of the seven forums which we had last night in Eugene. Very well represented at that hearing were members of the Independent Living Alliance, which are all kinds of disabled folks, the blind, in wheelchairs and so forth. They're very much interested in this legislation and what kind of access it's going to be able to give to them, which is really important. We haven't had that kind of direction and or the money to begin to implement that. We probably are looking at we're looking at the $5 million if we can get 2145 passed. It went out of House rules on the 3rd of February, and it's been sitting in Ways and Means until last week, and we were beginning to gnaw our fingernails as to whether it was going to come up. So we're very much interested in getting this, in getting it moved. But we believe that this is a really good beginning to improving our election system, and we ask for your support in moving 2145 as soon as you can, even though it hasn't quite arrived. I guess it goes to House rules first, and then we'll come to you.
Actually,
go ahead, Senator Brown.
I believe it will go directly to the House floor and then to the Senate floor.
Okay, that's good.
That's where we're having this hearing.
And this process today that we are having
is... Yes, and we very much appreciate that.
Can it go to the Senate without being assigned to...
Came out of Ways and Means.
But was it assigned to Senate rules?
No, it will not, because we need to do a rules... We will need to do a rules suspension.
That's what I was going to say.
To the Senate floor.
So
yes.
We'll do a rules.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
going to assist...
We didn't have time.
Process of getting it through.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we wanted a little information on it today.
Yes.
Well, let's talk to those incompetent people down in Ways and Means.
Well, I think I'll let you handle that, Senator.
They're invited guests in just about 20 minutes, Madam Chair.
Yes, and you carry the message.
Yes, I will.
Madam Co-Chair, I want to make one clarification. The timelines in the federal legislation run from the date of enactment, and that would be the date that the President signed. That would be October 29th, 2002. So that's why we have the April 28th deadline right in there.
Thank you very much, and we're looking forward to moving forward with this.
Right. Thank you, Kathy.
Indomitable testimony.
I'm going to go look that up, Senator. Okay, close the informational meeting, and nothing further. We are adjourned.
Did you do the bill request before I got here?